Welcome to the Verity Podcast for Tuesday, March 12th, 2024, where we separate the spin from the facts. I'm Scott Wallace.
And I'm Eric Steiner. Here's a look at today's top stories. Ramadan begins without a Gaza ceasefire.
The Democratic Alliance claims victory in Portugal's election.
The U.S. evacuates its Haiti embassy staff amid gang violence.
The U.S. Department of Justice opens a criminal investigation into Boeing.
The U.K. is found to be the second most unhappy country globally.
Sam Altman returns to OpenAI's board.
Police in Pakistan crack down on opposition protesters.
U.S. Senator Bob Menendez pleads not guilty to obstruction of justice.
The U.K. allocates £117 million to protect Muslim communities.
Scientists advance toward making IVF eggs from skin cells.
And a professor offers a controversial new theory of gravity.
Our top story, Ramadan begins without a ceasefire in Gaza. Here are the facts, as agreed upon by Democracy Now!, the Times of Israel, the New York Times, the Associated Press, Reuters, and Axios. Negotiations over a temporary ceasefire and a release of hostages between Israel and Hamas stalled Monday, while Palestinians in the Gaza Strip began to fast for Ramadan. Mediators had hoped the deal could be struck before the beginning of the holy month. This came after tensions between U.S. President Joe Biden and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu flared over the weekend after Biden said in an interview that Netanyahu's policies were, quote, hurting Israel. Netanyahu responded by calling Biden's comments incorrect and suggesting the majority of the Israeli public supports his government's decisions. Aid delivery to Gaza has been a focal point of disagreement between Biden and Netanyahu as hunger and disease run rampant across the Strip. A Spanish ship that was expected to deliver food to Gaza last week is still docked in Cyprus due to unclear delays. Israel said it welcomed the aid, but added that security checks would still be in place. The U.S. military on Sunday said it sent an army ship to the coast of Gaza carrying equipment to build a floating dock and pier. Once in place, armed escorts would protect the ship and its cargo while engineers construct a temporary causeway to shuttle aid to the coast from the ship. The plan will take up to 60 days and require around 1,000 troops. Meanwhile, Israel and Hamas are reportedly determining whether an Israeli strike on the Nuseirat refugee camp in central Gaza over the weekend killed Marwan Issa, who is often referred to as the Hamas number three in the Strip. Israel believes military leader Mohammed Deif and Yahya Sinwar, the group's political leader in Gaza, masterminded the October 7th attack. Gaza's health ministry reports that the war's official death toll has surpassed 31,000 Palestinians, attributing at least 27 of those deaths to starvation. The official Israeli death toll from October 7th stands at around 1,200 people, and there are still over 100 hostages being held in the Gaza Strip.
Scott, thank you for the update. The pro-establishment narrative is our first spin. It's coming from NBC. Israel must be able to defend itself from terrorist attacks, and the U.S. is committed to preventing malicious actors from threatening Israel's legitimate concerns. However, the Biden administration is losing its patience with Netanyahu's intransigence. The humanitarian situation in Gaza is rapidly getting out of hand, and this disaster must be remedied. So the U.S. is taking its own steps to alleviate this dreadful situation.
And the pro-Israel narrative from Jerusalem Post. Israel will always be thankful for the U.S. steadfast support, but the Biden administration must refrain from tying Israel's hands behind its back. Hamas isn't interested in negotiating in good faith and has consistently shown its preference for violence. In contrast, Israel has done everything it can to ensure the safety of civilians in a war it did not want. Israel will pursue its goals, which are incredibly popular with its citizens, regardless of whether it annoys Washington or anyone.
We continue with a pro-Palestine narrative coming from Middle East Eye. Because it's increasingly anxious over the upcoming U.S. presidential election, the Biden administration is resorting to cheap tactics to deny it's supporting Israel's brutal war on Gaza. Biden has armed Israel, given it diplomatic cover, and refused to call for a permanent ceasefire, incentivizing continued bloodshed. While Palestinians starve, Biden is describing grossly insufficient plans for new aid delivery mechanisms when he should be putting a stop to Israel's criminal behavior.
And we have a nerd narrative from the Metaculous Prediction community. They say there's a 5% chance that a shared power agreement will have de facto power in the Gaza Strip on January 1st, 2025.
News from Portugal, the Montenegro-led alliance claims victory. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Guardian, Politico, Reuters, South China Morning Post, and CNN. Portugal's center-right Democratic Alliance, led by Luís Montenegro, claimed victory Sunday in a closely fought snap election, despite no party winning a majority, with almost 99% of votes counted. While the Democratic Alliance and the Socialist Party won 79 and 77 seats, respectively, the far-right Xanga Party scored a victory on 48 seats. Montenegro has ruled out negotiating with Xanga to create a conservative majority, while Socialist Party leader Pedro Nuno Santos has announced he would lead the opposition. However, Xanga's leader, André Ventura, who fought the polls on promises to eradicate, quote, excessive immigration and corruption, claimed voters want his party and the Democratic Alliance to join forces. Snap elections were called in Portugal after Prime Minister António Costa resigned in November amid allegations that his government had mishandled major investment initiatives.
Thanks, Eric. The Guardian brings us the right narrative spin. Xanga is merely 5 years old, and it was obviously not expecting a full-scale victory. Estimates suggested it would corner 15 to 20% of the vote share. Therefore, an 18% share should be perfectly acceptable and indicate a humongous rise from the 1.3% it had in 2019 and 7.2% in 2022. Its goal of rupturing Portugal's five-decade-old bipartisan system has now been achieved, which is a major accomplishment.
France 24 has the left narrative. Xanga's gaining of electoral legitimacy in Portugal is part of a broader trend in Europe. In recent years, far-right political parties have strengthened in Italy, Hungary, Slovakia, France, and Germany. They have risen either as standalone entities or in alliances. Besides mainstream items on its agenda like fighting corruption and stricter immigration checks, Xanga also proposes controversial measures like chemical castration for sex offenders. Warning bells ought to go off, at least now in Europe.
And we have another nerd narrative from Metaculus. There's a 1% chance that any member state will leave the Eurozone before 2025. I wonder how this affects, I've heard from several people and read in the news, people moving to Portugal or Americans buying property in Portugal or getting Portuguese passports and things,
right.
You know, supposedly it's very favorable conditions. I wonder if this puts a stop to that or if this pushes that further. I just don't know.
I don't know what I'm going to do with all my property down there. What are you doing with yours?
Yeah, what am I going to do with all this port?
Right.
And news from the chaos in Haiti as the U.S. evacuates its embassy staff amid gang violence. Here are the facts as agreed upon by France 24, BBC News, Guardian, Daily Mail, CBS News, and Al Jazeera. The U.S. Southern Command airlifted non-essential embassy staff from Haiti and stepped up security at the building in the capital, Port-au-Prince, on Sunday, as the Caribbean country further descends into gang violence. Embassy operations in Haiti will reportedly continue despite the overnight operation, which the military claims to be in line with its standard practice to increase security at diplomatic missions worldwide. This comes as the area around the embassy has been one of the most affected in Port-au-Prince, which is estimated to be mostly controlled by gangs. Molotov cocktails were recently thrown at the Ministry of Interior and Territorial Communities. Yeah, when they said it was an all-you-can-drink resort, I wasn't expecting Molotov cocktails. That's
Did you have to wear wristbands to get those drinks?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I paid the cover. I'm good here.
Okay,
yeah. Also on Sunday, Germany's ambassador to Haiti, as well as the permanent representative in Port-au-Prince, left the country for the Dominican Republic, along with other EU representatives due to the deteriorating security environment. The violence has escalated since Prime Minister Ariel Henry left for a regional summit last week, as gangs have launched coordinated attacks targeting the airport to block his return, as well as two prisons and the National Police Academy. Envoys from key countries, including U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, were expected to meet with Caribbean leaders in Kingston, Jamaica on Monday to discuss the crisis in Haiti.
Scott, thank you so much for those facts. We're going to continue with the spins, the first one being the establishment critical narrative. It's coming from the Haitian Times. While Haitians reject the gang violence, they support the demand for the incompetent and power-hungry Ariel Henry to step down. Unfortunately, only the escalation of violence convinced the Americans to urge their puppet lacking legitimacy and popular support to resign. Haitians are struggling to free themselves from the shackles of foreign control and meddling. Only when the Haitian people and no longer Washington determine their political fate will the country find stability and peace in a multipolar world.
CNN counters with the pro-establishment narrative. Recent events highlight yet again that violent gangs are seeking to plunge Haiti into chaos as they attempt to dictate the country's political fate. Reports that the U.S. is urging the Haitian prime minister to resign over the chaos Rather, Washington is concerned with speeding up a peaceful transition of power through an inclusive governance structure to prepare for a UN-authorized security mission and put Haiti back on the path to democracy within a rules-based order.
Metaculus is going to chime in as well with their nerd narrative. They say there is an 85% chance that Ariel Henry will cease to be acting prime minister or prime minister of Haiti before April 1st, 2024, for any reason.
I guarantee you, when those folks were assigned to that embassy years ago, yes. Caribbean, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
This is a plum job. They were incorrect.
According to some recent reports, the U.S. Department of Justice is investigating Boeing. The facts are agreed upon by the New York Times, Al Jazeera, The Hill, and Barron's. According to several U.S. media outlets, the U.S. Department of Justice, or DOJ, has opened a criminal investigation of aircraft manufacturer Boeing related to an early January incident on an Alaska Airlines flight. Alaska Airlines said it was cooperating with the probe, while Boeing declined comment about the investigation, which has reportedly included interviewing witnesses, including air crew, about the January 5th incident in which part of the fuselage blew off while in the air. Pilots were able to safely land the plane, and there were no major injuries after a panel for an additional emergency door blew off. The National Transportation Safety Board opened an investigation, and the Federal Aviation Administration began looking into Boeing's safety record. The DOJ probe will help determine whether anything that caused the January 5th incident occurred because Boeing failed to fulfill its duties related to a settlement from a federal investigation of the safety of its 737 MAX plane, which was involved in deadly crashes in 2018 and 2019. Boeing's stock dropped 2.9% to $192.78 a share in early trading Monday, costing the company $3 billion in market value.
Thanks, Eric. We have a narrative A from the Washington Post. Obviously, the DOJ's 2021 deal, which was supposed to hold Boeing to account for the crashes that killed more than 300 people, didn't do enough to cause change at the company. Boeing was allowed to buy its way out of trouble. The January 5th incident will hopefully reinvigorate the DOJ to do what it takes to hold Boeing accountable for its lax safety standards.
Forbes has a narrative B for the story. The National Transportation Safety Board is already probing what may have led to the January 5th incident, and whether Boeing's lack of dedication to safety led to the plug blowing off the aircraft. The DOJ getting involved at this point could intimidate witnesses who are cooperating with the board but might clam up if there's a risk of criminal charges. It could be too early for the DOJ to interject.
And we have a nerd narrative from Metaculus. There's a 40% chance that by 2050 it will be possible to purchase a zero-emissions flight from New York to London for less than half U.S. weekly household income. So it's a paper airplane. It'll be fun.
Yes, I can't wait.
Just a really big piece of paper. You know, right. You started on the top of Mount Rainier and then just have it coast over. Anyway.
Yeah, put the GoPro on it, though. We don't want to miss out.
That's true. Yeah, if you want to capture that.
Right.
The UK ranks second worst globally for mental health. Here are the facts as agreed upon by NDTV, The Economic Times, First Post, Time Out UK, The New Zealand Herald, and Daily Mail. According to research group Sapien Labs' annual Mental State of the World report, the UK is the second most unhappy country globally. Based on surveys from over 400,000 people across 71 countries, the report indicates a decline in mental health worldwide since 2020 or the onset of the COVID pandemic. On the mental health quotient scale, which ranged from negative 100, very dissatisfied, to 200, very satisfied, the UK registered 49, just above Uzbekistan, the lowest ranking country. At least 35% of Britons reported feeling distressed and ranked last in the percentage of people struggling mentally category. The report revealed that access to smartphones at younger ages and consumption of ultra-processed foods strongly impacted respondents' mental health. In addition, the report found that developing countries outperformed wealthier nations, including the U.S. and the U.K., in terms of mental well-being rankings.
Thanks, Scott, for the facts. The first spin is narrative A coming from Huffington Post. Reports like this show that poor mental health across Europe and North America is an indication that being rich or economically developed doesn't translate to greater life satisfaction. This report is a call to action to take greater care when exposing younger people to certain technologies and to strengthen social and family bonds in order to foster genuine happiness in wealthier countries.
The Telegraph brings us narrative B. Conflating emotional health with happiness sometimes makes measuring the mental well-being of individuals worldwide tricky. As regards to this report, while it shows a lack of recovery from the pandemic's initial mental health toll, there may have been a reporting bias, as only internet-connected populations could respond to the survey.
And of course, the nerds from Metaculus are going to chime in with their narrative. They say there's a 50% chance that the World Happiness Report will rank the U.S. at least 18th in 2022-2024. Sam Altman returns to the OpenAI board. Here are the facts as agreed upon by the Financial Times, OpenAI, Verge, TechCrunch, Guardian, and Al Jazeera. OpenAI's co-founder and chief executive officer, Sam Altman, has returned to the ChatGPT maker's board of directors after his sudden ousting and subsequent rehiring last November. Based on law firm WilmerHale's review, the OpenAI board has concluded that Altman's conduct did not mandate removal, adding that he and Greg Brockman remained the right leaders for the San Francisco-based artificial intelligence company. WilmerHale's probe reportedly found that OpenAI's board expected Altman's firing to, quote, mitigate internal management challenges, noting that the decision wasn't based on concerns for product safety, finances, or investors. OpenAI's board has also announced the addition of Sue Desmond-Hellman, former CEO of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, ex-Sony Entertainment president Nicole Seligman, and Instacart CEO Fidji Simo. Altman was fired on November 17, 2023 for failing to be consistently candid in his communications. However, he was back as CEO less than a week later, after many threatened to resign over his ousting. The company also said it would make, quote, important improvements to its governance structure, including implementing a new set of corporate guidelines and creating a whistleblower hotline.
Thanks, Eric. We have a narrative A on this story from OpenAI itself. Altman's return caps a dramatic period of upheaval that saw him removed amid justifiably furious debate about the advantages and risks of harnessing AI's potential. Now, OpenAI can finally settle down and refocus on spearheading the world's AI trajectory. Besides Altman's welcome return, the company board has garnered solid experience and leadership to ensure growth and fulfill its mission of ensuring that AI works for the common good of humanity.
We follow that with narrative B, coming from CNN. Though Sam Altman's return to OpenAI's board appears to lay a confusing episode to rest, the multiple debates in the technology field that set in motion continue. From concerns over who spearheads the world's movement towards an AI-oriented future, to whether innovation should always be welcomed and whether corporate and public interests are aligned regarding this new frontier, the world still needs answers. Companies like OpenAI cannot be left alone in deciding the answers to these questions, which have consequences for all humanity.
And we have a nerd narrative from Metaculus. There's a 1% chance that OpenAI will be a public company on May 31st, 2024. Police crack down on opposition protesters in Pakistan. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Voice of America, The Print, ARY News, The Express Tribune, Al Jazeera, and Pakistan Today. Lahore police have lodged a case against 38 leaders and workers of the main opposition Pakistan Tehreek-e-Insaf, or PTI, party for multiple serious offenses, including terrorism and vandalism, as well as assaulting and attempting to kidnap a police constable. This comes as violence erupted in the eastern Pakistan city on Sunday as members and supporters of the party rallied nationwide to protest against alleged election fraud, with videos showing police officers attacking the demonstrators and pushing them inside police vehicles. Opposition leader in the National Assembly, Omar Ayub, claimed on Monday that over 100 party workers were arrested across the country, adding that they may have been subjected to human rights abuses and vowing to investigate the accounts of officials through parliamentary committees. PTI leader Sher Afzal Marwat further announced plans to hold another self-characterized peaceful public gathering in Islamabad on the eve of Pakistan Day on March 23rd, vowing to appeal to the High Court if the deputy commissioner rejects his request. Jailed former Prime Minister Imran Khan's PTI has pledged to continue protesting until the results of the February 8th elections are overturned amid allegations that the Election Commission of Pakistan manipulated the outcome to steal its mandate. Last month, the now-retired commissioner, who claimed that the general elections were rigged, withdrew his allegations and apologized to the commission in a recorded statement.
Scott, thanks for the facts. The first spin is narrative A, coming from Time. These elections were flawed from the beginning. And with authorities carrying out blatant lawfare against Khan and his PTI, this outcome was widely anticipated. What's surprising, however, is that the U.S. has failed to take stronger action to ensure that its treaty ally has a free and fair vote, despite Biden arguing that promoting democracy overseas is the defining challenge of our time.
Narrative B comes from Dawn.com. There's no valid evidence that Rigging or controversy marred this polling process. However, the West has sought to outrageously meddle in Pakistan's internal affairs, voicing unfounded concerns over the vote while baselessly demanding probes into alleged irregularities. Pakistan's sovereignty, its rule of law, and the results of its election must be internationally respected.
Metaculous is at it again with their nerd narrative. They say there's a 21% chance of civil war in Pakistan before 2036. Senator Menendez pleads not guilty to obstruction of justice charges. Here are the facts as agreed upon by CNN, Fox News, ABC News, Wall Street Journal, Politico, and New Jersey Globe. Senator Bob Menendez, Democrat of New Jersey, made his third appearance in Manhattan federal court on Monday to plead not guilty to charges in connection with a federal investigation into bribery allegations. This comes as the Democratic senator and his wife, Nadine, as well as New Jersey businessmen Whale Hanna and Fred Davies, were arraigned on a superseding indictment that added obstruction of justice charges to existing criminal counts. Prosecutors claim that Menendez not only accepted bribes in exchange for official favors for businessmen in the governments of Egypt and Qatar, but also sought to disguise some of them as loans. Earlier this month, New Jersey businessman Jose Uribe admitted to helping to pay for a Mercedes-Benz convertible for assistance in resolving a pair of criminal cases in the state, agreeing to cooperate with federal prosecutors. According to a Monmouth University poll conducted with 801 New Jersey adults before a grand jury hit the senator with 12 new criminal charges, his approval rating among registered voters stands at just 16%, and nearly two-thirds of residents want him to resign. The New Jersey Globe reported last week, citing three sources with direct knowledge of his plans, that Menendez hasn't mobilized a team to get on the ballot for the Democratic primary ahead of a March 25th deadline.
Thanks, Eric. Newsweek brings us the Democratic narrative. While Democrats do have a strong message against MAGA anti-democratic extremism in the run-up to November elections, they can undermine that if a liability such as Senator Menendez remains in their ranks. It's utterly contradictory that the party that stands for the rule of law in the U.S. still accepts a sitting senator under federal indictment on bribery allegations. The party has a chance to do the right thing.
The Republican narrative comes from Washington Examiner. Set aside the fact that Democrats control the Senate, Republicans should do much more to expel the corrupt Menendez, particularly when compared to the GOP push to oust George Santos from the House. The GOP must take the bull by the horns and firmly expel Menendez from Congress and take a stand against corruption from the Democratic Party, which is barely hanging on to Senate control and knows it.
And we have another nerd narrative from Metaculous. There's a 75% chance that the GOP will control the Senate after the upcoming 2024 elections. The UK commits £117 million to protect Muslim communities. Here are the facts as agreed upon by the UK government official website, The Independent, Al Jazeera, and BBC News. The UK government announced on Monday that it will commit £117 million, or $150 million American dollars, over the next 4 years to security programs that protect Britain's Muslim communities, including mosques, Muslim faith schools, and other community centers. Home Secretary James Cleverly said that the investment is crucially needed amid growing tensions following the Hamas attack on Israel on October 7th and the Gaza War, noting that anti-Muslim sentiments have been rising and that there is no place for anti-Muslim hatred in the UK. According to Tell Mama, an activist group reporting on Islamophobia, a 335% increase in anti-Muslim posts, assaults, and activities occurred last month compared to the same time last year. The UK has already earmarked £29.4 million, or $37.6 million, for services protecting Muslims, including £4.9 million, or $6.2 million, following the start of the Gaza War. The funds will go toward CCTV cameras, alarms, and fencing, and come at the beginning of Ramadan. It also comes after Sunak last month committed to providing more than £70 million to protect the Jewish community. The 4 years of funding will go to the Community Security Trust as part of the Jewish Community Protective Security Grant. Sunak came under fire for not strongly condemning statements made by fellow Tory Lee Anderson, who said that London Mayor Sadiq Khan and Labour leader Keir Starmer were, quote, controlled by Islamists. His government is now planning to release a new definition of extremism.
Thank you, Scott, for the facts. As we take a look at the first spin for this story, it's a progressive narrative coming from the Frontier Post. No matter what Rishi Sunak and his government might say, it's clear that he is complicit in the anti-Muslim rhetoric of his fellow Tories. Sunak is engaging in performative gestures by giving lukewarm speeches condemning extremism and providing some money to certain causes, but he has failed time and again to meaningfully put an end to the Islamophobia plaguing Britain.
And the conservative narrative comes from The Telegraph. As tensions continue to rise across Britain and the world, Rishi Sunak is trying his best to unify Brits of all creeds and beliefs. Extremism has no place in the UK, and Sunak's government is doing its best to fight the horrific rise of anti-Semitism, as well as Islamophobia, that has happened since October 7th. Sunak and the Tories will continue to protect the UK's Jewish and Muslim communities from religious and ethnic hatred.
There is a nerd narrative for this story coming from Metaculus. They're saying that there's a 10% chance that the Tories led by Rishi Sunak will form the first government after the next UK election. Scientists advance towards making IVF eggs from skin cells. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Eureka Alert, The Times of Israel, Science Daily, and NewsMedical.net. Researchers at Oregon Health and Science University have documented the development of the ability to turn a skin cell into an egg capable of producing viable embryos. Scientists, led by Minori Saitu, combined eggs made from a male mouse's skin cells and mouse sperm to create embryos, which were later implanted in the wombs of female mice. Researchers are working on developing a way to use these technologies in humans. Dr. Shukrat Metalipov, the senior author of the study, which was published in the journal Science Advances on Friday, said the ultimate goal of the research is to produce eggs for patients who don't have their own eggs. These technologies could help women experiencing infertility due to advanced maternal age, cancer, or other causes, as well as aid same-sex couples who want their child to be genetically related to both parents. Although researchers are studying the application of the procedure in human eggs and early embryos, it will likely be at least a decade before it's deemed safe and effective in humans.
Thanks, Eric. We have Narrative A from The Guardian. This is a potential game changer in reproductive science. This still-developing technology likely has a long road before it's approved for usage in humans, but the science is promising and the impact on individuals facing infertility could be tremendous.
Narrative B comes from the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. Infertility can be upsetting for many couples, who often turn to emerging reproductive technologies, but many of these processes have ethical implications. Most concerning is the fact that many human embryos will be created for the sole purpose of experimentation and then destroyed.
Nerd narrative coming from Metaculus on this story. There's a 50% chance that the first cloned human will be born by July 2040. Our final story, a professor offers a controversial theory of gravity. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Physical Review X and The Guardian. University College London professor Jonathan Oppenheim has released a new theory of gravity called Post-Quantum Theory of Classical Gravity, which suggests that space-time is smooth and continuous but also wobbly. In the summary section of his paper, Oppenheim questions the possibility of Albert Einstein's general relativity theory, which posits that matter shapes space-time via quantum physics. The current scientific consensus is that dark matter, an unseen form of matter that is believed to make up 85% of the mass in the universe, is what exerts a gravitational pull to keep the vast amount of stars on the outer edges of galaxies in orbit. Instead of dark matter, Oppenheim, alongside PhD candidate Andrea Russo, claims that random fluctuations in space-time are what keep these stars in orbit. This, they say, could explain phenomena such as rotating galaxies, observations that originally sparked the theory of dark matter. Oppenheim argues that his theory could also help explain phenomena such as black holes, which he say come from the inherent stochastic and unpredictable nature of space-time curvature. Oppenheim's theory has not been accepted by everyone, however. Professors Carlo Rovelli and Jeff Pennington have signed a 5,000-to-1 bet with Oppenheim that his theory will prove incorrect.
Scott just presented the facts, and we have our final spins of today's podcast, the first one being Narrative A, coming from Cornell University. While this theory still needs more research and scrutiny, the, quote, dark matter consensus should be called into question. It certainly is plausible that as you go further out to the edges of a galaxy and lose the gravitational pull of stars, the movements of the universe itself likely take over as the cause of orbits.
Narrative B comes from the Sci-Fi Network. Dark matter is the current scientific consensus because researchers have actually found evidence of it. If the laws of physics are to be followed, galaxies that are orbiting faster than the amount of visible matter contained in them must have a sort of invisible matter doing the work behind the scenes, and there's solid basis to believe that dark matter permeates the universe around us.
And the final nerd narrative from Metaculus says there's a 51% chance that we will know what dark matter is before 2050. Thank you. Thanks for listening to the Verity Podcast for Tuesday, March 12th, 2024.
Each day, we use machine learning to read about 5,000 articles from about 100 newspapers and figure out which ones are about the same stories. For each major story, our editorial team then extracts both the key facts that all articles agree on and the key narratives where the articles differ.
Find out more at Verity.news and download the Verity app on the Apple App Store or Google Play. For Scott Wallace, I'm Eric Steiner, inviting you to join us next time on the Verity Podcast.